As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Understanding the Group C tiebreaker chaos. Why Tiddlywinks is still the hypothetically over-competitive go-to scenario. Why can't you have a big magician? The shock hybrid-friendly result of the week. A brief history of World Cup accreditation lanyard sizes. The pure Qatar 2022 World Cup 11. When does a player have only one thing on his mind? And watch out, football commentators, because an AI Alan Smith is coming to take your jobs. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 213 of Football Clichés, the best football podcast since sliced veg. Alongside me for the adjudication panel is Charlie Eccleshare. How's it going?
Very well.
Good, good, good. And also on the adjudication panel today is David Walker. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Charlie, you didn't ask Adam how he was, which
I normally do. I know.
I'm keeping a spreadsheet about this, you know.
Yeah, it's genuinely made me quite self-conscious. So I thought I'd mix it up a bit, see if people are paying attention.
Well, I can confirm that I am not too bad, thank you. Although, rather perturbed by some low-key scenes in my five-a-side WhatsApp group this week. I've kind of semi-retired from it anyway, but usual call went out for who's available this week. Some people saying, oh, I can't do 8:45 this week, or no, I'm away with the kids or whatever. Someone simply replied, this is Matty P, simply replied with, I'm out with a knee issue. You can't say knee issue at that level of football.
No, a knee problem.
Yeah. Would problem be worse? I don't know, because I feel like that's something you would say in like everyday chat, but you wouldn't say, oh, I can't come into work today, I've got a knee issue. Back issue.
It's like he's trying to get out of an England squad for a friendly.
Just got a niggle. I've got to manage this niggle very carefully.
Issue. That sounds bad. I mean, issues, Charlie, are where do they stand in the hierarchy of injuries? Issues are potentially things that could run injury-wise. Mm. They're not a self-contained thing, are they? An issue. Yeah. It's got to be managed.
Yeah, knee issues. You don't really know when they're going to be back often. That they can be quite troublesome and worrying.
Yeah.
So I feel for Matty P.
Yeah, they could turn into a problematic. Mm. Knee. Mm. Problematic obviously has different connotations these days, but I think it still persists in an injury sense. A problematic knee.
Troublesome knee.
Oh, it's troublesome now, is it?
Yeah. I think you do that more.
Yeah, you can't use problematic. I've got problematic knee. I don't know what to do with it.
Well documented knee problems.
Yeah, very much so. But any time for the adjudication panel. Kicking off, this is from Andrew Howe-Ely, who's enjoying Korea versus Ghana the other day, and Dion Dublin and Jonathan Pearce evolving their chat very gradually about chips.
And they've got this high-tech offside system here. That's been used before. Champions League had it. Well, there's a chip in the ball and then all these cameras around the stadium, and they react with the chip to spot up whether a player was in an offside position the exact second the ball was played. Well, surely the decision should have been made earlier then.
I mean, if you had a chip in the ball when I was playing, the ball would be even heavier. You go on that.
Do you try too many chips off the ball?
Too many chips on the plate when I was playing.
Some things never change.
Text almost vintage co-commentary stuff from Dion Dublin there, Charlie. Almost felt like a throwback, given how deep we've delved into this art.
Yes. Did we mention that as one of the sort of key areas, sort of food? I mean, it is. It really is.
The ability to cook. I think they would. I think later in their game they were talking about how Dion Dublin just he can't cook or something like that.
Right.
They said, yeah. I've seen
but that was
cooking or something.
But that wasn't the cook. That was more just the diet, wasn't it? That was more like what we used to eat in
that
our
was,
day.
Yeah, in my day, steak and chips before
exactly.
the match
on the coach on the way up. Yeah, lovely stuff.
How heavy does he think these microchips are? By the way, not going to make the ball that heavier, are they?
I think they're 18 grams. I read.
Well,
which
okay.
seems to me like quite a lot. I thought balls were like 180 or something. So that's like 10% of the ball. How heavy is a ball? Oh, it's actually about 400 grams. Okay, it's fine. The proportion, that's all right. Still would make something a difference, but it has been tested and will have no effect on the flight of balls at the World Cup. Elsewhere is this kind of World Cup week unravelled, Dave. I was watching Australia versus Denmark, and Denmark sort of giving it 7 out of 10 kitchen sink effort at the end to try and claw themselves back into it. And great to see Kasper Schmeichel going up for a couple of corners, really bringing the Barclays to Qatar. I mean, that is Kasper Schmeichel just doing Kasper Schmeichel things. If he's not running either up for a corner or desperately back again, then what is he doing?
Yeah, completely. And I mean, and that was basically the extent. I think you've been very generous with your 7 out of 10 kitchen sink rating there. Mm. They were pathetic. Rubbish. But yeah, and of course he got nowhere near any of the balls that came into the box.
I actually think Kasper Schmeichel doing Kasper Schmeichel things would be more him complaining about the concession of a goal. I don't think there's ever been a better pound-for-pound keeper at complaining about goals. There's pretty much every goal he concedes, there'll be something that's irritated him. And if a penalty, God forbid, if a penalty scored against him, there will be some sort of minor infringement.
Elsewhere at the World Cup in Group C, C for chaos, we almost got into a hilarious situation of Poland and Mexico needing to be separated by yellow cards. The residual emotion from this, Charlie, was that Poland are scumbags and that they're now the most unpopular team left in the World Cup and we're all going to be sort of cheering against them. Is it that big a deal? I mean, just not even gaming the system. They just knew what they needed to do.
No, I know. I was confused. I tweeted this yesterday because you know we were talking about they've made a lot of friends at this tournament. And I was saying Poland seemed to be the exact opposite. They seem to have alienated a lot of people and lost any mates they might have once had.
It's pantomime shit.
I was thinking of like precedents for that at World Cups and teams that have sort of, and other ways you can do that. I guess maybe that Uruguay team with the Suarez handball, they would have lost a few friends by doing that. I think it was more an irritation at just how bad they'd been and that they were going through despite it somehow. There's something quite unsatisfying about a team losing 2-0, offering absolutely nothing. I think they, as well, because if Argentina had wanted to win 4 or 5, they probably could have done. They were basically the beneficiaries of the fact that Argentina not only missed chances, but also were just like stroking it around because they had no interest. But yeah, it was funny. For lots of different reasons, it really wound people up.
In one of those situations where I was in a pub and I overheard some people behind me. So in the pub that we were in, there was really bad signal. No one could get on the internet or anything.
How awful.
So I heard there was a group of lads behind me watching the game and they were speculating about who's going through and, oh, I think it's... And I sort of leaned over and went, actually...
No, you've got to do it.
I had to. I said, actually, you never guess what. If Argentina score one more goal, then Poland and Mexico are going to be separated by yellow cards. And they just absolutely blew their minds. They could not believe it. And then when that Polish player got booked, everyone was like, oh, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But there was still a few more to go. There was a great moment on the BBC where the commentator, after the goal, the table flashed up, the group table flashed up, and the commentator was talking through the points and how everyone's level, and then there was a very, very clear 30 to 45 second silence where he was obviously being told it is in. Now, remember, no, it's yellow. It's goal difference. It's goals four. Mm. It's head-to-head. It's yellow cards now. It's yellow. And then it's lots. And then he came back in at the end. We probably should have found the clip, actually. But it was very obvious what was going on.
I think he was caught out because he kept saying things like, well, I think by the speed with which it unravelled, because he was saying things like, well, you know, for Mexico to actually go ahead, there needs to be a four-goal swing, as if that was, like, impossible. Then all of a sudden it was 2-0 and 2-0. It was like, wait a minute, there's been that four-goal swing. Yeah. But then they were still ahead. It was like, oh, but... And I did wonder if there'd actually been a yellow card in the intervening few minutes that tipped it, but I don't think that had happened. I think that would be being generous.
Commentators shouldn't have to be doing permutations themselves. Not even joking about having to use a calculator to do
amicus.
It.
The yellow card thing, though, it's like... It literally happened in the World Cup 4 years ago.
It did. It did happen.
Senegal got knocked out, right? And Japan went through on yellow cards in 2018. Yeah. So it's happened before. I was just really disappointed that we didn't get level on yellow cards or disciplinary points. I really would love to see a drawing of lots.
Happened once before in World Cup history.
Italia 90, wasn't it?
Yeah, I found, someone posted the footage on Twitter. I didn't know they'd done it in public. But yeah, Blatter, so all over it like a slime ball that he is. Doing it like a proper sort of World Cup draw. It was sensational stuff. But the debate inevitably raged, Dave, about using yellow and red cards as a tiebreaker in this situation. Someone else suggests, because obviously maybe the thing that they didn't envisage with this sort of thing is that it would affect the gameplay towards the end of the final group game. Teams would behave differently if they knew they had to not get yellow cards. And maybe it didn't manifest itself hugely during the Poland game, but people were talking about other ways that you, more football-y ways that you could separate teams. And someone else said, well, about shots on target? Think how farcical that would become. Like, Opta would have to get involved, wouldn't they? So, well, if you shot from the halfway line and the keeper saved it, and you just keep doing that, is that shot on target?
You should do it like top trumps. So there are like five categories you can pick. Someone just has to pick one score at random and compare. I'm going to go with possession.
Oh,
possession,
I see. What?
Average possession. Average possession, 49%.
That's
and then see what they've got.
Can you imagine if to blow the minds of, or just to sort of stoke the fires they did it on XG, how absolutely incredible that would be, just to blow the minds of the people who already hate it.
You'd lose a whole demographic of World Cup viewership there, wouldn't
that
you?
That would actually probably tip people more over the edge than a lot of the stuff that's happened in Qatar.
Yeah, maybe stick to yellow and red cards, that's all right. Of course, you know, we talk about the following thing a huge amount, and we've maybe spiralled into its many variants too much, but I want a classic textbook vintage example of what a player he was, by the way. Here's BBC Radio 5 Live's Alistair Bruce Ball and Chris Sutton spotting the legend of legends in the crowd.
Alexandro wins a throw-in for Brazil inside his own half, wide on the left. Brazil 0, Switzerland 0. The great Ronaldo in the house.
What a player he was.
Oh, goodness me.
I hoped it was going to be Ronaldo.
Yeah, it's been a while, actually, Charlie, since we've had a delivery like that. I mean, no, by the way, Sutton didn't quite indulge us completely, but it's good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, Ronaldo's so in that sweet spot, because even I feel this a little bit, that like the youth of today don't fully appreciate just how good he was. And I think that is a key element to that.
He does occupy this weird kind of position in world football history, David, that he was clearly indisputably unbelievably amazing, and yet, as Charlie says, there is this kind of impetus to kind of have to just remind people that fucking hell, he was good, wasn't he? Maybe it's because his career was basically sort of curtailed or at least interrupted. I don't know, maybe it didn't hit the heights it should have done, but there is this kind of weird impetus to have to tell people how good he was.
Yes, and I think there's a few factors at play. One is the sort of physical side of things. The whole fat Ronaldo thing has kind of dogged him, and people, maybe that unfairly, that image is in people's minds that he was this sort of, you know, unathletic sort of, almost sort of a kind of A-list journeyman towards the end of his career, really. But then I think what people forget and need to be reminded is that those seasons that he had pre-injury, pre-1998, he was the sort of proto-Ronaldo and Messi in terms of the goals-to-game ratio. It was so good, but he only did it for one or two seasons.
Yeah, he was basically goal to game.
Yeah.
I do also think even just the name Ronaldo, the fact that even his name has been taken.
Yeah, it's quite annoying.
It's annoying, and it's a really basic thing. But you're right, Dave. I mean, to a lot of people, I think for those who didn't see those early years, they kind of saw the Elvis in Las Vegas sort of washed up period rather than the sort of him at his pomp. And he was, you're right, he did pave the way. He also, he was before the era when he didn't like smash it in the Champions League in the way that, you know, Ronaldo and Messi have just sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think of him as a Champions League footballer at all.
Exactly. They've just laid waste to all those records. And,
But nevertheless, he probably remains by quite a distance, the most what a player he was, by the way, option for a close-up in the crowd at a World Cup. I can't think of anyone who would rival him. Like, even if Zidane popped up, I don't think they would necessarily sort of do that because it's so obvious. Because it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, of modern greats, I think that's right. Unless you went someone like Cafu because you wanted to make the point that would the youth of today, you know, appreciate just how good this right back was?
Javier Zanetti.
Yeah, yeah, good shout.
Yeah, you'd go for his longevity, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, still looking young, Javier. Anyway, ahead of the England-Wales game, listener Andy Gray got in touch. Not the Andy Gray. I've done this before, I'm sure. It said, on Battle of Britain Day, I just heard Ali McCoist say Scotland and England teams would battle as hard to beat each other in a game of tiddlywinks as they would as a game of football. Charlie, how did and when did tiddlywinks become a kind of proxy, hypothetical war ground for this sort of thing?
Well, I remember in my childhood it was a thing. So certainly it's been around for, you know, 30 years or something. I remember it being used.
They're probably my word for the ultimate battle of wits.
There probably are people listening who don't know what tiddlywinks.
What a game it was.
What it actually is.
So I've kind of forgotten, I have to say.
You've got little plastic counters, like like thin coins, and you get... If you've got a bigger one and you press down on the smaller one to flip it up into a little sort of pot.
That's what I had in my head. That's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
No wonder they'd be competitive about it.
I remember it being a lot simpler game than that, but that sounds really difficult. I don't know. Maybe it is the ultimate thing, but I just can't see it as a kind of region-spanning...
Perhaps Barry Hearn could revolutionise and bring it back.
Well, I do. The first time I ever heard it was in relation to the 96 Atlanta Olympics. And I think that a sport was introduced to it that was seen as being trivial or whatever. And someone, I can't remember who it was, said something like, oh, next I'll be introducing tiddlywinks to the...
It does work, isn't it? Because it's a silly word, isn't it? And it's frivolous,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Tiddler, you know, it's a tiddling little
nothing. Yeah, maybe there's nothing better than that. Is there really anything else? Probably is an Olympic sport now. So, yeah, tiddlywinks is the only thing left. Loved this one from Peter Duck. Peter Duck, who writes in and said, Messy little magician. Do you get big magicians? You don't, even though magicians are usually portrayed as being fairly tall, but surprisingly dexterous. Good spells for a big man. This is absolutely true. The co-commentator construction of, oh no, like the little Spaniard or something like that. Their textbook, they are literal...
Paul Daniels is a little magician, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, Penn and Teller, whichever the big one was, he's a big magician.
Is Derren Brown... I mean, quite small, isn't he, Derren Brown?
Not a magician.
How tall is Derren Brown?
I'm not having Derren Brown as a magician.
What would you describe him as?
More of a...
Mind control.
He's only 5'9", by the way.
More towards the hypnotist end of the scale.
He is a mentalist... illusionist.
The little illusionist, Derren Brown.
Mentalist, illusionist, painter and author, but not a magician. He's only 5'9", so it doesn't matter. But, okay, regardless of the actual size of actual magicians, Charlie, this does seem like a bit of a ripple in the language of football. We should be allowed to have big magicians. There's no reason why a big magician shouldn't exist, although I can't think of any... Yeah. I mean, Zidane, would he have been a big magician?
Yeah. Zidane's literally the first one that comes to mind. I think because... It is, you're talking about sort of twinkle-toed players often with magicians.
Mischievous scheming.
Yeah, scheming. And I think that does lend itself to littler players somehow.
I don't think it should be ring-fenced for little people at all.
No,
this is really unfair.
Yeah.
I think you could, I bet Zidane at some point would have been called a magician, just without the
beak. So the little thing is more of a sort of modifier. So the default status of a magician is being big.
Yeah.
You actually have to express that they are little. Maybe that's what it is. Didn't think of that. Don't think Peter Duckett thought of that either. So
I'm not sure. Yeah, I know what you mean, but I don't think that... I mean, the magician... Also, yeah, it's a magician, isn't it? The magician. That's very true. But there are also some nations. So you're right, because your example of the little Spaniard.
Yeah.
You'd so really hear the big Spaniard, I feel like. I mean, maybe like Llorente, but I...
Which co-commentator do you think uses that construction the most, by the way? Sort of who's, you know, the little Spaniard? Great ball there by the little Spaniard.
I can imagine Danny Murphy saying that.
Okay, interesting. Might return to this theme later on. Elsewhere, away from the World Cup briefly, my favourite FA charge day for quite a long time. Statement from the FA, Ashley Barnes has been charged with breaching FA rule E3.1 during an interview that took place after Burnley's game against Blackburn on Sunday 13th November. He did, of course, refer to Blackburn as the Bastards, as they are known amongst the Burnley fan base. First of all, do you think this is enough for an FA charge? That's all he did. I'm not saying in your mind, I'm saying in the grand scheme of things, is this enough an FA charge?
Yeah, probably.
Really?
I don't know. Can we be having post-match interviews? You'd be calling other teams?
What, because it's a swear word, so it's like a watershed situation.
Yeah.
If you used a milder term, would that have been all right? What have you said, twats? Prats. What have you said, prats? And we beat the prats.
Prats,
you're allowed. Down the road.
Prats.
I think prats would be all right.
Prats is fine. Twats is not.
What about twats?
No.
And, okay.
And bastards could be triggering for some
bit
people.
Bit loaded.
Okay. Yeah, they might not be a nice thing to hear.
I think we're right. We're right at the threshold here. I can't think of a word that might split the difference even more. Dickheads. That dickheads would,
no, that's
would be all right.
Yeah. That's, I mean, yeah, prats is probably about as close, but I think you're just... Well, famously, I said the Burks, which I always thought to be a very
But I know your voyage of discovery for this. Yeah,
but I was stunned to hear that. But if you... I think you... Depends who was on the... If you were like, oh, yeah, so good to beat the Burks... Could you get away with that?
But unusually for an FA charge, Dave, this isn't a very complicated affair. This isn't going to require sort of lip readers. It's not going to require sort of multiple witness statements. He said it, they noted it down, and they've charged him. So he's been charged with improper conduct, bringing the game into disrepute by using abusive and or insulting words. He's got until Friday the 2nd of December, that's today basically, to provide a response. This could potentially be the greatest written reasons ever released by the FA, because it's not going to be able to go into any detail. It might go into the etymology of bastards, and that's about it. Both in a literal sense and in a Lancashire footballing context. So this is going to be sensational. I can't wait to read it. And also, it's a victimless crime, so it's fine for us to laugh about it. Charlie, if I say these two following words to you, what do they mean to you? Hybrid friendly. Hybrid friendly.
A hybrid friendly.
What's a hybrid friendly?
It is.
You're going to get this right, which would be annoying.
No, is that a friendly game between two international countries played in another country?
So close, so close. It is, in fact, apparently, according to Google, a friendly between a country and a club.
Okay.
I hate that on FIFA, when you choose a club team and then someone picks a
You
nation.
Can't do that. That's
It's not, a very yeah. FIFA thing.
Yeah.
This could be the ultimate one. You'd only ever watch this as a FIFA recreation on YouTube. Borussia Dortmund this week was sunk 2-1 by Vietnam.
Ooh.
In Vietnam.
Wow. That's so weird, because Dortmund, for some reason, were the club that came to mind when you said a club v country. I have no idea why. And I'm sure I haven't seen that.
It's a great combination, though, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah.
Vietnam and Dortmund. Love it. I'd watch it. It's just the kits alone. Yellow, I'd watch it.
Maybe that'll be the start of a big rivalry.
90th minute penalty as well.
What a result for Vietnam.
Mm.
Huge.
Do you get FIFA ranking points for that? I guess not.
Should do. Should
Probably
do.
Should do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too right.
Get a place in the Bundesliga spy.
Yeah. I want to return to World Cup matters now, Charlie. I've done some serious research about this. I'm not a paper sizes expert by any stretch of the imagination, so bear with me, I may not have got this completely right, but lanyards, they are definitely smaller at this World Cup than they were before. I mean, they were getting comic.
They were getting massive, yeah.
So I've done a little bit of research on Getty Images, and here's what I've gleaned. 2010 World Cup, they were about A5 size.
Mm-hmm.
2014, also A5. 2018, they went to A4 height, but not crucially width.
Okay,
so they were sort of massive pamphlets. So 2018 is the absolute peak of accreditation size. Maybe it's something to do with post-Soviet bureaucracy. I don't know. But that's where it got big. Now we're back to something the size of a large smartphone. They're not laminated folders anymore with bits of paper inside. They are essentially like cards. Mm-hmm. End of a bit of string, sort of plastic passes, as they should be.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're a VIP at an NBA game or something like that, that's what they are. Much better way of doing things.
Yeah, there's no need for them to be enormous. And that's become a creeping issue in football.
But it could potentially ruin the iconography of a triumphant manager, Dave, on the touchline during a tense World Cup game, a semi-final that his nation have never been in before, and all the pictures of him with a massive fucking lanyard around him. Terrible.
The fact that managers, players, substitutes, coaching staff are either told or feel the need that they have to wear their lanyards is always... It's absurd. Why? Once you're in, Fine, show it on the door, just go through that formality. But you don't need Carlos Queiroz or Gareth Southgate, whoever, wearing it on the touchline. The fourth official is going to come up to him and go, can I just
I think
see
it's
a
definitely
Lanyard,
outside
please?
Of the official's remit, isn't it? They're not going to go, I don't give a shit about that, mate. Do what you like. But it's a very inconsistent take-up of accreditation wearing, Charlie, over the course of the last four World Cups. You go into Getty Images, and I know you do. You know, it's a 50-50 chance that you'll see a manager wearing it or not. I mean, Maradona 2010 definitely wasn't wearing it. No chance. Why would he?
But you know what, as well, with this, I was thinking, where do I have an image in my head of what you're talking about? And it's I now know where it is. In the famous Peter Drury commentary, which you would have heard in the intro, This Nation is Going to Dance All Night.
Yes.
The guy who you can see doing this kind of mad dance, which I'm now mimicking, his lanyard is sort of flailing about all over the place.
Maybe it does add to the aesthetic.
It's certainly stuck in my mind.
And that was the Russian coach.
Yeah.
Maybe he was setting an example.
Oh, he would definitely have to wear it, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the lanyard knocking about, but it does look like he's sort of dancing at a Tory party conference.
It does.
His hair down afterwards.
You also see, I think I noticed, it was either one of the Australian or Denmark coaching staff the other night, and they were wearing their lanyards sort of round them diagonally, like people wear bum bags at festivals.
Yeah.
Trying to hide it.
Yeah.
Cool, trying to be cool.
Tucked into their shirt.
I feel sorry for the journalists, though. I mean, they probably just want big lanyards so people know who they are and feed their egos.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Welcome back to Football Clichés, and it's now we're well past the halfway point of this World Cup. We've absorbed enough of it and all its various characters. I think it's high time that we did the Pure Qatar 2022 11. Now, Charlie and Dave, I'm not too fussed about the format of this. I don't want to get too structured. Let's just throw some names about. I'll kick you off with a perhaps far too obvious one. The Athletic's Felipe Cardenas was in the mix zone after Mexico-Poland, and he asked Guillermo Ochoa if he's going to be back for a sixth World Cup, and he simply replied, "Si." He's doing it for us. He knows his place as well, doesn't he? So that's great news, isn't it, Charlie?
A World Cup would not feel right. I did also think a World Cup without Mexico in the last 16, going out in the last 16, will feel weird. We'll all feel a bit bereft.
Yeah,
there are a few other contenders, I think, for the goalkeeper spot in terms of Szczesny's been too good. He's been, but maybe too good for he's sort of Golden Gloves contender if he keeps going the way he's going. Probably get knocked out, but
too
maybe
much too, domestic baggage for Szczesny as well.
But then there's a couple of the other goalkeepers. The Iranian goalkeeper who broke his nose, in that game.
Gonna need more than that.
The hapless Qatar keeper who got dropped after the first game.
Yeah.
Flailing around, and the Saudi Arabian goalkeeper who had a blinder against Argentina.
But I guess it depends if we're talking about them in an Ochoa kind of way, where you know we expect them to be coming back year after year.
Oh no, this is a purely self-contained thing. This is purely about it's essentially which players are you sick of hearing about? Which players do you think you'll be disproportionately hearing about in relation to how well or how often they played?
I definitely think, admittedly, he's been really good, but I think Cody Gakpo is a modern day sort of El Hadj Diouf or whoever, absolutely smashing it at a World Cup. And I'm very curious to know if, A, if he's signed at all, you know, when that happens, and B, how good he is. Because you feel nowadays in, well, maybe they still will be, but teams will be going on a lot more than just the fact that he scored against three opposition who probably really even at the level of, say, a mid-table Premier League team.
Oh, I'm utterly sick of hearing about Cody Gakpo, Dave. Honestly, I know he's good, but it's all I'm hearing is Cody Gakpo this and Cody Gakpo that. And I'm pretty sure in the last game for Holland, he earned a that man as well. Who else? I think it was actually a who else but. So we know that he's hit that status at this World Cup. So Cody Gakpo's well up front for us, isn't he?
Definitely. Yeah. we've gone from goalkeeper to to front.
Well, I don't care about striker. I don't think we've even got 11 names. That's not important. But Cody Gakpo's strike partner has to be, as Pastor Man writes in, Enner Valencia. Specifically the bit where he gets stretched off and then starts the next game. He did this twice.
Also, what's funny about him is when I saw Ecuador were playing in that first game, I was like, God, I know nothing about them. I was like, I wonder if Enner Valencia's still playing. That was all I had to go on. I was like, no, surely he won't be in. Sure enough, there he was, the key man. Yeah.
If Rashford, Gakpo and Mbappe don't score again in the tournament, he'd be level on them with three goals. But Mbappe would win the award on assists, annoyingly.
Oh, right.
But
you can't have any of Valencia winning the World Cup gold in 2022. I'm sorry.
No.
Cannot be allowed. In a way, it's good that they're out. In a way. For that reason.
For the integrity of the competition.
Yeah. One to keep an eye on. I don't think he gets into our 11 now, but could potentially later on, Charlie. Dan McCarthy writes in, says Niklas Füllkrug is the nearest closer of Qatar. I imagine we will see or hear almost literally nothing of him until the next Euros. Bonus points for his whimsical Wikipedia bio too. A real non-footballery looking footballer as well. He looks like he has absolutely no place at a World Cup, but here he is.
Yeah. That's a really good shout. And he's that rare thing of someone who, even nowadays, we most people won't really know much about him. Going, you know, to be a striker for a team as big as Germany, that's quite unusual.
I like the sound of him. Dave, a couple of shouts for Australian defensive beanpole Harry Suter. Especially now he's going to be coming up against Lionel Messi. There's going to be some very good photos from that game, isn't there? Some cameraman is going to get the angle right where Suter looks like a million foot tall. Messi looks really tiny.
Like a big and small magician standing next to each other.
Very good. But yeah, I think he's well on the way to cult status at this World Cup, Harry Suter.
I mean, the fact that he plays for Stoke as well, I think really does embody the real qualities of Australia. I mean, the goal actually was a brilliant goal they scored against Denmark, but they are a team of 11 just hard-working lads, aren't they?
Big time. Here's one name for you. He fits the I simply Googled him the other day to assess his situation category, and that's Issa Laiduni. He's just one of those players who sort of catches the eye, so I then had to go and find out how old he is, and then turned out to be quite disappointing because he is actually 25 already, and he plays his club football in Ferencváros in Hungary. So I'm just thinking, well, that's it. He's not a Premier League midfielder now. We can't have him. He's not good enough. But he's shining at the World Cup, so there you go. Tunisia's finest.
I mean, what one of the Saudi heroes...
Aldosuri.
Yeah, Aldosuri's probably the one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Feels like, you know...
I think the shine's been taken off. The fact that they lost those two games afterwards, it means that it was all for nothing.
I don't know. I think that enshrines it all the more. It was this sort of weird outlier. I mean, he won't stand the test of time, but in this sort of very
It feels like a million years ago already.
Yeah, in this self-contained...
I think the moment will live on.
So far, but maybe.
But in terms of the players, I think if they'd got through to the next round, they would have. Then you've got a real chance of like stamping your mark on the tournament in a different way.
I think Phil Foden might squeeze into this 11 at some point. But let's keep this 11 pending. We might return to it. More important matters, though, as we record, 4 of the last 16 games have been confirmed. I just want you to tell me which year they belong in, please. Charlie, let's start with the Netherlands versus the USA. I'm going pretty 2006 with this.
Yeah, I want to say a bit earlier, like 2002, but Holland weren't at that World Cup. up. So if you're being really literal about it, that's when the US were, I think, because the USA got to that year's quarters.
I would go 2010 for that one, actually.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Netherlands got to the final. USA, we remember it because they played England. And if you told me Netherlands beat USA in the round of 16 in 2010, I'd believe you.
I completely agree. Bang on. Okay, Argentina, Australia. Now, this is a really interesting one. This is a nice, fresh-looking one. But at the same time, Dave, feels very 1974.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's too group stagey for the round of 16, isn't it?
I think it is. True.
It's very groups. It's very first game of a group, and Australia get handed a bit of a lesson, but then regroup and somehow kind of escape, clamber out with 4 points.
Just to undermine the Australian achievement even more, Tom Place writes and says, "I'm sorry, but Argentina-Australia is an Emirates/Craven Cottage friendly, not a World Cup knockout game."
It's very rugby World Cup knockout game.
Yeah, yeah, they can have that. France-Poland, Charlie, 1982.
Yeah, yeah.
Both wearing really nice pinstripe Adidas kits.
It has to be the 80s, doesn't it? That's when Poland had their sort of golden age and they had that really good team. Yeah, that feels right.
But England-Senegal, Dave, I'm not really sure where to place this. Never played each other, of course.
Yeah.
There's no real kind of guidance there. I'm going about 2002.
They very nearly did play each other because they played the other sort of winner and runner-up from the same groups, if you see what I mean. Because we played Denmark, didn't we, and Senegal were in their group.
Good work, good knowledge. Okay, 2002 it is. Okay, we'll fill the rest in a few days' time. Next up, Richard writes in, and he was watching Iran versus USA. Danny Murphy has had this to say about a wayward Iranian shot.
Is that Talahi bending just too high? Ooh. Decent, very decent.
He got some fizz and whip and dip on that. It was a lovely strike from such a distance. Doesn't come down quickly enough.
Fizz, whip and dip, Charlie. Richard says this is surely physically impossible. I'm not sure. I mean, if you had to picture a shot that has fizz, whip and dip. Okay, let's go through them individually. What is fizz?
Fizz, I think...
Fizzed in.
Yeah, I think fizz has to be hit with a lot of power and be moving in an awkward way for a goalkeeper. It feels very modern bully.
Is it high or low?
He's really fizzed that.
Can a high shot be fizzed? Because somebody, if I fizzed a pass into your feet, that's a low
pass.
That's
right? Smashed really low. Yeah.
Yeah. Daisy cutter almost.
Yeah.
But maybe shots are kind of different for this. So, but can a high shot have fizz?
I think it can. Okay. I think a shot can have either.
Whip and dip, when we have no issue with here, Dave, because you can have a shot with whip and dip. That's a horizontal and vertical affair coming together, isn't it?
Yes, and I think fizz is the outlier here. I think the shot that he had, if people haven't seen it, it was from sort of left-hand side of the pitch, and he's hit it with his right foot, curling to try and get it in the opposite top corner. It did have dip and whip. Not enough of either to make it go in, but I didn't really see the fizz.
I think it's got to be a straight shot, hasn't it, to be fizzed?
Mm. I can see what he's getting at, because it is one of those shots that moves all over the place, and I think he wants to convey that.
But it was
that.
Designed to curl, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's the problem. So maybe the ultimate shot that has fizz, whip and dip, Charlie, would maybe Ronaldo's free kick against Portsmouth back in the day for United. Because that was designed to be fizzed. It was designed to be hit straight in a general sense with power. But it also had whip and dip because it moved from side to side and it sort of dipped at the last minute and went in. So fizz, whip and dip.
It can be done.
It's possible. It can be done.
I think that's right. I don't think you could dispute any of those three in that particular free kick.
Next up, Werbenuk writes in, Dave, and says, when is it acceptable for a player to have one thing on their mind when they get the ball? Who is the most one thing on his mind when he gets the ball player? So let's get the scenario here. What's the archetypal situation for? He says, I think he's only got one thing on his mind here, George. Who's George?
I think it's a striker, and they are about 20 to 25 yards out. There are options. He could pass it off left or right, but he chooses to get his head down, plow towards goal, and try and get a shot off.
Has it opened up for him?
I don't think it has to, no.
So it's not begging for a shot to be struck?
No.
Okay. No, because it can be, and I'd be interested to get your guys' read on this, but it can be both a positive and a negative. I think more positive in a,
yes,
he's just scored a goal, and so you're praising the fact he's just got one thing in his mind. It can be a little bit, just needs to get his head up there. As soon as he gets it, he's just got one thing in his mind, and I think maybe, you know, he'd just be a little better there, or just he's got the runners either side of him. I've really slipped into huddle there, but... Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it can be it can be good and bad.
Yeah, I figured sort of two scenarios here. The first of all, like yours, Charlie, where it's the shot is at an angle, but it's a very presentable chance. And he was so committed to doing it that the option of passing clearly never, it was so visibly never entered his mind. And that when he misses and the player he should have passed to sort of has a go at him, he doesn't put his hand up and say sorry. He just says, oh, I had to. Mm. Like, I was always going to shoot, basically. That kind of gesture. I also sympathise, Dave, with your kind of longer range situation where they're travelling with the ball for so long that the persistence becomes a thing. It's like that there was only one thing on his mind when he got that ball. There was only one thing on his mind. When he got that ball, that's where you implied that they travelled with it and then one could do anything else.
Yeah. Image I have in my mind when I think of this is sort of early to mid Harry Kane, when he had that period when he first broke through and first became a proper striker, where he was just scoring, literally every shot he was taking was going in, and he would be shooting from like 25 yards and get in the bottom corner.
Yeah, maybe sort of a determined Harry Kane style, cutting in from wide-ish. And like having to wait for the opportunity to manoeuvre around the opposition players, Charlie, to then get a shot away is a very one thing on his mind situation. Because as you travel in with the ball, there are options available to you.
Mm.
But you're so clearly waiting for the opportunity for a space to open up once you've got skipped past that final defender to finally then rattle the shot away. That's a very one thing on his mind situation. So maybe Harry Kane is a very good example.
Yeah. I mean, I think Cristiano Ronaldo, you mentioned earlier, because he's someone who just like gets shots off. Or it's the midfielder like Steven Gerrard who's gone on a run and is known for his long range shooting at the end
of dribbles.
I think it's
the preserve of strikers, this.
Really?
I don't think you would sort of feel the need to say it if it was a midfielder. I think you'd use different language.
I sort of agree.
Language.
I think forwards only, yeah.
Because I think...
As soon as he picks that up, he's just got one thing on his mind.
But I think...
I don't know, there's kind of an implication that he's justified to have one thing on his mind.
Yeah.
He's the main guy who should be shooting anyway. But then I suppose Gerrard could...
Yeah, if you're Gerrard, you can get away with that, I think.
If you're Gerrard, even though you might be doing the exact same thing on the pitch, I just think the co-commentators would just naturally go down the scruff of the neck route.
Fine. Okay, interesting. Now, this is from Adam ECFC, and I think this is a whisper it quietly but situation, Charlie. He asks, is this Brazil side just too Premier League-y? Even in the modern World Cup, they've retained a certain mystique, but their number nine playing for Spurs is so un-Brazil. I kind of sympathise with this, but we've made the bed for ourselves. The Premier League has got so big, so much bigger than the other leagues, that we can't have them scattered around La Liga and Serie A anymore. They're ours. They're our Brazilians.
I know what he means. Though their right back was refreshingly, because I think it was also a centre back who was playing there slightly in extremis, in a kind of, oh shit, we haven't really thought about our defence. You know, in the way that they, you know, Junior Baiano and Cesar Sampaio would suddenly pop up and be like, who on earth are they? So I was quite reassured, and I'm sure this is my own ignorance, but I didn't really know even who, because it wasn't Danilo, it was someone else who came in for him in their last game. Broadly though, yeah, I mean, even to the point where all their subs, or not all of them, you know, Rodrigo plays for Real Madrid, but most of them are from Premier League clubs as well.
I mean, it's good in a way that there's a semblance of ignorance there, because that's mystique. That equals mystique. So you're still in the clear. But Dave, are they just a bit too familiar, this Brazil side? I can't have them winning it. I don't think I want them winning it for that reason alone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, there's obviously, you know, we're way past the point where there being any mystique about Brazil, and yet we all still try and convince ourselves that there is still a bit of magic,
Still have a striker playing up front who's still in Brazil, even if it's at the tail end of his career and he was in Europe banging him in back in the day. They should have like
a Fred
Edmundo figure. No, better than Fred, like a good player who's playing in Brazil.
Edmundo's the dream, yeah, because he was really good and a big character.
Or even sort of latter-day Romario, something like that.
Bebeto.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Argentina were an interesting counterpoint, because I did think they retained a bit of that, in the sense they had a few players who I wasn't so familiar with. And the kind of players who you only can really imagine playing for Argentina, you're not really sure even who their clubs are.
Argentina are great for this, actually. I think they have taken on that mantle, but in a kindly sort of more chaotic way, because all the talk about Argentina in the lead up to the tournament is Lionel Messi, and then their sort of array of other players who are still fucking brilliant and play for great clubs, and they make you think, well, Argentina are stacked this year, they're going to go all the way. And then ultimately, when it actually comes down to it, it comes down to a bloke called Enzo, who you don't know who he plays for, to decide things for them, become their key player. Argentina are such a weird squad. Nicolas Otamendi. What are you doing here?
He's still there.
It's amazing.
Yeah. But it's interesting, Adam, that you said that about their squad being stacked, because I think there is still a bit of a hangover from the era when they had like Higuain, Tevez and Aguero all playing up front. And we kind of just assume they have these like incredible attacking options. I don't think it's quite the same now.
Right.
They don't quite have that. But we're so sort of conditioned to think
it's
that.
The World Cup, man. That's where we're allowed to do it. You're allowed to have this kind of lax thoughts.
I mean, they've got a guy who plays for Atlanta.
That's mad. Quite intrigued by this one from Adam Kenny. He says, while watching Australia-Denmark highlights, Australia's kit had three separate colours. Yellow shirt, green shorts, white socks. While Denmark's three bits of kit were all red. Is two distinct main colours across the shirt, shorts and socks the most common chromatic combination? First of all, let me just say that Denmark having red shirts, red shorts and red socks are the reason they're out of this World Cup. Like, go away. You fucked it.
Is that a FIFA thing, though?
No, not anymore. It was a FIFA-y kind of thing at 2010, 2014. There was a real directive about having block kits. England had to play in all white, for example. But they seem to have relaxed this out of nowhere. Because there was no obvious logic for it in the first place. But Denmark seemed to have stuck with it.
And Denmark, wasn't because of their sort of the Hummel thing where they were deliberately downplaying the sort of branding because of the Qatar.
I don't think white
projections.
Shorts would really have much of an effect there, I'll be honest.
Yeah. No, fine.
But so the upshot of all of this, Dave, is what is your favoured combination? How many colours should a team use for their kit and where should they be deployed?
I'm a good person to ask this because there is an eternal debate among Watford fans as to what is our optimum colours. There's like a big divide between yellow shirts, black shorts.
What was the Blissett era?
Or yellow shirts and red shorts.
Oh, and red socks.
We've had both where it's been black shorts and black socks, red socks. But we have had an era where we had yellow shirts, black shorts and red socks. So we have had all three.
What I really like about this, Charlie, is it's kind of like a Sunday league conundrum. Like if you're a Sunday league team getting to choose your new kit, you've got a blank canvas. You can do what you like, and so many teams seem to get it wrong. I tell you what I don't like, Charlie, is where the shirts and shorts are the same colour and the socks are a different colour, especially if it's darker. Because I don't want to be severe. Don't want to be severe because that's very much their thing. So I'm trying to think what I like. Is it a classic kind of shirts and socks the same colour, but
maybe
shorts are different?
Maybe it's just it's the consistency. That's all we ask. And we find it odd when I do find that strange talking about Watford having the different ones. I found it really weird when Southampton dropped the stripe. It was almost like, is that allowed? I don't know.
I feel like international teams should be encouraged to go with three colours as much as possible, especially if they are core
of their
to your
flag.
National identity or your flag.
Yeah.
Like Belgium should be wearing red, yellow and black in any sort of combination from shirt down.
They see fit.
Brazil, yellow, blue, white.
I mean, they fucked it this year. I mean, those shades of all of those colours are terrible. I don't know how they keep getting it wrong. It can't be that difficult. Nice blue, sort of a slightly more golden yellow and dark royally kind of green. Just do that. You look amazing. Pelé 1958. That's what you should be doing. Last question from our listeners. Dan Gregory says, why is everyone now saying he gets his goal? Mitrovic finally got his goal. Lewandowski gets his goal, etc. What does it mean? And why is it everywhere? Will it please go away? And does it only apply to slightly greedy, well-known strikers in the second half of a game? Charlie.
I had this written down. I meant to raise it. That's amazing. Wow. I love when this happens.
Excellent.
Yes, I heard it in relation to someone not getting his goal. After the first England game, the 6-2, when Harry Kane was subbed off, the commentator said, well, he hasn't got his goal today. And I thought, what is the threshold for his goal? Is it only...
How have we not done this before?
I know. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, the sort of possessive...
So what's the primary criteria?
Well, I think at its most basic, and I think this counts for a big proportion, is just really good player who's used to scoring and there are a lot of goals and he hasn't got his goal today.
Oh, so it's a bigger picture thing. It doesn't matter what happened in the game. If you're a documented goal scorer, you already qualify for his goal.
I think you're already far more likely to have it his goal. And I think if there have been a number of goals...
Oh, so this is a getting in on the act style situation.
A little bit, and if you've gone close or... I don't know, you get that sense. Or it might be that striker has not scored for a few games, but played really well in the game, got an assist to him. Like, look, well, he hasn't got his goal today, but you can't fault his effort. Or he's offered so much for the team.
I think there is potentially a bit of an implication that if striker X was not to get his goal, he'd be like annoyed in some way because he's so used to doing it.
So accustomed to scoring.
In the same way that, you know, like a grumpy old dad would be like, oh, what's wrong with that? Oh, he hasn't had his dinner yet. Do you know?
His dinner. Yeah, true. Yeah, instead of just saying he hasn't had dinner.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Had your Snickers. But I'm torn here. I'm torn between whether it's a player who just always scores and therefore should be expected to, or it's a striker of any ilk, has struggled to find the net in that game and then eventually does do it.
There's that. There's the he gets his goal and they're sort of relieved, kind of.
Yeah. So this can't happen in the first half, Charlie, right? You happy with that?
There needs to be some build-up.
The only exception, maybe, is like someone like Lewandowski, who hadn't scored a World Cup goal before this tournament.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think that becomes a narrative thing.
But I think, Dave, that would be, if he were to score early, that would be he gets his World Cup goal rather than just he gets his goal. But the other scenario I was imagining, do you think it could be situational? So if, like, when Lampard, I don't know if this could be, but like when he went back and played against Chelsea and scored, if someone's like returning to an old club, does that elevate them to potential his goal?
I think it's overridden by it just had to be.
Yeah, it just has to be him, stuff, doesn't it? Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a his goal situation at all. But I'm glad first that we've never touched on this before. I'm glad by your immediate enthusiasm for it. And I'm glad the fact that Dan Gregory sent it in and the fact that it's a very sort of World Cup-y thing as well. So glad to have discussed that. Now, finally, on this episode, can't wait to talk about this. I don't think anybody else knows about this in our sphere, at least. This comes from listener Lee Wall. Now, it's all about a company called Veritone, who have partnered with StatsPerform Opta to create a synthetic voice AI commentary for World Cup games based on Opta data. Here is the marketing release for it. Prominent sport commentator and former pro footballer Alan Smith has partnered with Veritone Voice to cover the world's most prestigious football tournament. This builds on the recent strategic partnership that combines Veritone's synthetic voice AI technology to provide voice commentary with Opta Stats data, designed to provide real-time play-by-play, pre-game, in-game, and post-game updates. Passionate fans can hear real-time game updates from the announcer on their phone or computer in their local language. So, to cut a long promo short, Charlie, this is a kind of an accompanying piece of content. I don't know why you'd want it while you're watching football, but it's this kind of marrying up of data and audio. Have you got your head around it?
Slightly.
So it's AI commentary.
It's AI commentary.
Terrible news for the Jonathan Pierces and the Peter Drurys and of this world.
Certainly.
Robots coming for their jobs.
Yeah, does sound very ominous. And we know how good AI is these days. I see the viral videos of robots that go out every 2 weeks and someone goes, ooh, this is terrifying, when they can't even pick up a fucking can or something like that. Right. Anyway, this is all about fan engagement and bringing a unique voice to a number of concurrent events, apparently. Just to give you a more of an idea of how this works, here's the promo clip from Veritone.
Power a live-action experience for viewing and listening to a match.
He sends a pass to the centre in the attacking 18. Batu Binsica clears the ball. Goal! It's a goal. PSG closes the gap with M. Hafer. Offer a low left shot by Messi just barely finds the net. 36 minutes in, and the score is 1-1.
This is like early computer game commentary.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's that level of just like, yeah, player does this. It's a goal.
36.
I had high hopes for this.
West Ryslip.
Yeah. I thought technology might have moved on. So what they've done, they've got Alan Smith's voice, and it's not that he's just recorded sort of stock phrases like he might do for a computer game. He's obviously spoken into a microphone and they've managed to AI his entire voice.
Okay.
They've uploaded every single World Cup game to their YouTube channel with his commentary, his AI commentary attached to it. I'll be honest with you, they are a struggle. It's essentially a blank background with just his commentary over for 2 hours using what is a disappointingly narrow set of phrases. Here's a little sample from England versus Wales. This is literally the kickoff.
Rice has sent the ball out of bounds. And that's out for a throw. Davies sends a pass to the right wing in the attacking half. Stones takes control.
Out of bounds.
Alarm bells ringing now. This doesn't look like the polished product I wanted it to be. But we need to stress. We need to kind of stress test this, don't we? We need to stress test AI Alan Smith. And what better way to do it than England's double salvo against Wales. This is how AI Alan Smith announced them.
Rashford gets the ball. Goal. He shoots. It's a goal. England has won the first point in the game after a shot by Marcus Rashford. 49 minutes and 49 seconds in, and the score is 1-0 with England in the lead. In a strong start for Wales, Ramsey passes. Rodon passes to the centre in his half. Meffan receives. To Roberts in the left wing. He gets a long ball into the attacking 18. Ward, the goalie, receives. To Rodon. To Davies in the right wing. England's defence stops him in his tracks. Tackle by Rashford. The ball flies right by Davies. Kane takes control. Kane sends a chipped cross in the centre. Foden receives. Goal. Foden shoots. It's a goal. It's not looking good for Wales as England scores for the second time after a shot by Phil Foden. 50 minutes in, and the score is 2-0 with England in the lead. Davies miscalculated that play.
Oh, wow.
That's it. Get him on the world feed. Get him doing solo commentary at 1 a.m. for something.
God.
Go.
That's amazing.
Is this a cheap shot from us? I expected AI to do better. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it's a cheap shot.
If they're going to put themselves out there. It's
got a lot of work to do, clearly. But I'm just trying to get my head around it still. So Alan Smith has not recorded those words, because why would he say Marcus Rashford?
No, he kind of learns how to speak like him. That's how AI voice works, right?
And there's no one typing it. It's all generated by algorithms and it learns.
Yeah, it's fairly simple. The data's all put together to create a situation. So all the event things from Opta are put together.
I'm just like intrigued to find out why did it think that cross was a chipped cross when it clearly wasn't a chipped cross? Why did it take so long for
that pause was incredible
for Foden to score? Yeah,
that was like the famous pause Martin Tyler leaves in the Aguero commentary, iconic from Alan Smith.
I'm going to give them leeway on the chipped cross because it's basically a cross that went off the floor. I think that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a wide range of vocabulary they use for this. But much future for this, do you think, Dave? I mean, it's clearly early steps. We are at the kind of supposedly terrifying video of robot picking up a can of beans stage of AI football commentary, aren't we?
We are. I think the Drurys, the Mowbrays of this world are safe for now. But come 2026, who knows?
Very, very worrying scenes indeed. Hope to have an AI version of one of you on the podcast at one point. Cheers to you, Dave Walker.
Thanks.
Probably do a better job than you, Charlie. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
And we'll see everybody on Tuesday. Cheerio.
The Athletic.